The Business of Marketing podcast is brought to you by Demand Exchange. Demand Exchange generates high-quality leads at scale, helping you find your next ideal customer. Episode 6, recorded live at Advertising Week New York, features James Slezak, CEO of Swayable, in conversation with Justin Cook, chairman of Demand Exchange.
Welcome, James from Swayable, to Advertising Week here in New York. Really great to have you.
Thank you. First of all, give us a bit of a background.
Tell us a little bit about Swayable and how you got to where you are.
Yeah, well, Swayable measures persuasion. It's a data platform. It's used by many of the world's largest brands, their agencies, some of their strategy consultancies. And it tells you if your creative is going to cause lift. And the important thing is it tells you that in a time that lets you actually act on it. So, you know, many people are familiar with a brand lift study. The idea there is to say, look, you know, some creative is like a coupon and it's designed to be assessed according to whether someone buys something right then and there at the checkout counter. But actually, most of the work in a community like we're in here in New York is about big ideas that get you to want the product in the first place, love the brand, or understand the equities associated with it, trust, safety, quality, whatever they might be. The problem is people haven't got a lot of data about whether that's working. And you can't just point at click-through rates and view counts and engagement and say, well, that's a proxy. It's really not. In fact, it can lead you away from the ideas that cause lift. So Swayable's all about saying, what if we could get a measurement of that lift as easily as we do click-through rate optimization?
And does that happen before or after the event?
Great question. Well, ideally before, you know, because then you can do something about it. And I think, you know, the problem with a brand lift study, I think it's a good thing to do. We encourage them. But the limitation is you get it too late. You've already run the campaign at that point. So, you know, what do you do with that information? Well, maybe you feed it into your next campaign next year. But you're taking decisions every day, every week, every month. And if you can inform them with the best available evidence of if that creative will work, you're in a much better position.
So tell us a little bit about sort of the kind of, bring it to life for me. So tell me some stories, case studies.
Yeah, happy to. Yeah, well, look, we've got a whole bunch. We've got, you know, verticals at CPG, technology, telcos, Hollywood studios. We love our Hollywood studio clients. They had a blockbuster year with Paramount Pictures, one of our big users in Hollywood, and you know they had their banner year. I think until a recent release that will go nameless, I think it was the largest grossing picture with Top Gun Maverick. So you know that's a classic use case. They are trying to drive intent to see a film in theaters. That's what that marketing campaign is for. You know, enormous amount of investment, not just in making the films, but in marketing them, and it all really comes to a head on opening weekend. Are those consumers, those filmgoers, going to turn out? And that's an action that they've got to, you know, get in the car, buy the tickets, turn up at the box office, you know, pay the ticket price. And so all of that is critical. Just watching or, you know, getting reach on a digital ad is not enough. You need to know that you're actually causing them to turn out. So, you know, Paramount's been using Swayable routinely now for their major motion releases and the marketing campaigns for them now for several years. And, you know, look, we don't want to take credit for their great blockbuster year, but we're certainly part of it. They take the decisions about what to run using the Swayable data.
Let's get into the weeds a little bit of like actually what you did with them, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about literally how it works.
You bet. Well, basically, there's a setup phase where we're figuring out with the account. Let's take another one, you know, a CPG brand. We work a lot with a group out of Mexico, actually called Grupo Bimbo, and they have a lot of supermarket brands. I think some very large fraction of all American baked goods come from this one company out of Mexico, which is a really cool story, actually. And, you know, Sara Lee, for example, Thomas English Muffins, you know, brands you might think came from other locales actually have this parent company. And they engaged us at the beginning. In fact, they were working with Bain & Company, management consultancy, to modernize their marketing tech stack and also to invest more in upper funnel marketing because Bain and the experts on their marketing strategy teams know that, you know, you want to gain share. You got to go beyond just the coupons and the conversion campaigns. You've got to tell that story. So that first phase is about setting it up. What are the goals of these campaigns? And that can happen very quickly. We've done that in many cases in as little as a day. In fact, actually, Paramount, as the executives there will happily attest to, we did it in under a day. They've got a lot of fast-moving stuff. Luckily, our baked goods friends had a couple of weeks to get it set up. But the idea there is, what are your goals? What are the metrics? So in the case of the muffins, for let's say Thomas's English Muffins, it's I love these muffins and I'm considering purchasing them and I intend to purchase them. So the marketing and the creative for the marketing works if those numbers go up, and it doesn't if they don't. And so that setup phase happens. And then at that point, basically what the team's doing is dropping in the ideas either for the completed creative, as in an ad that they're about to put out in any channel, or an idea for that creative. So it doesn't actually even have to be a finished ad. It might be a concept. In the case of Thomas English Muffins, for example, they were looking at how to reach Gen Z consumers. Many companies have the same problem. You know, your consumers age out, you've got to reach the newer generation. Is our messaging actually doing that or not, or do we have to change it in some way? And there were a lot of ideas about how to do that. Some people thought, hey, the Gen Z kids are using a bunch of emojis and a bit more jokey. Maybe we should, age down our language and sort of mirror the way that they talk. Others said, maybe not. You should stick with a traditional tone. So these are very foundational questions about how to run many quarters of campaign and what should even go into the creative, not just the creative, but the creative briefs. So they would put together ads that exemplify each of those choices and just test them on Swayable, meaning they've got that success definition. They've got the creative. You know, here's an ad formatted like an Instagram ad with a jokey tone. Here's another one with an edgy kind of Gen Z tone. And here's one with a traditional tone. And what the Swayable platform does then in its 24-hour test is prove which generates more lift in demand for the brand. And the cool thing was, in that case, actually the traditional tone worked, which meant that all of the decisions they took after that on all the channels that they were marketing on were informed by that knowledge. And in fact, the lift was about twice what it would have been if they'd gone with seemingly the natural choice of throwing the emojis and, you know, talking the young kid. Reminds me of that picture, that meme of the older guy, I forget the actor, with the skateboard and the hat on backwards, sort right. of, you know. being authentic turned out to work best.
Who would know?
Who would have thought it?
So the test itself, tell me a little bit about how do you go about doing such an amazing test in such a short amount of time?
Yeah, well, look, the trick has been to productize. And so Swayable is a digital native product company. It's the majority of people on the team in our investment is technology. So, you know, engineers, primarily PhDs with backgrounds in published experimental science, are taking what is the best design for this kind of captive survey experiment and building it into a cloud-delivered product using really quite sophisticated population modeling that adds a lot to the statistical power of the test. So we basically set up this North Star metric for that team, which is statistical power for the test. And then for the product and design team, the ease of use of the product. All that means that, you know, it's kind of like handing someone the keys to Ferrari rather than kind of getting them in the, you know, engineering of the back office or the workshop. You know, we want to make this incredible piece of engineering very easy to use. You know, you can drive a Ferrari without being a mechanical engineer. And so with Swayable, we want this kind of, you know, fast race car kind of thing to be easy for marketers to basically focus on the thing that they're trying to innovate on, which is their stories, and not have to worry about how do I run a randomized controlled trial survey experiment with high statistical power. You know, the less they're having to peer under the hood, I think the more they can focus on the important job they're doing.
You know, we're operating in a multi-channel kind of world, exponential number of formats. Are you able to kind of work across all forms of media?
Yeah, that's part of what's so exciting about it. Once it's a pretest and it's done on our own first-party environment, so the consumers view the ads or the creative or the treatments on our platform, and that means that we're platform agnostic. You can test Facebook ads, you can test Google ads, you can test even billboards. We did a lot of work with Airbnb on a very large billboard out-of-home ad campaigns, and the beauty of that is in each case, the consumers are in our captive survey environment, so they're being exposed to that creative on our digital platform. And what we're measuring is not how are you distributing it, not is the Facebook ad platform manager getting you the right audience. That's important, but the problem is you've already made a decision about the creative usually at that point. We're focused on that decision. Is that the right thing to give to that platform? Is it going to generate lift when that consumer sees it? or not. So if you like, it's sort of a, it's more the payload than the delivery vehicle, or more the kind of active ingredient of the drug rather than the sort of way you get it in. Yeah.
Got it. And you mentioned CPG, and you've given some other kind of really great sort of examples in this conversation. Is Swayable used in B2B?
Oh, you know, it's a great question. We do actually have a number of B2B accounts. We're working with a number of technology vendors, for example, who have large B2B marketing campaigns. I can name a couple, Intel, Square, Intuit, as examples. We do a lot of work with Amazon as well that has significant B2B marketing efforts. There's a line there always. I think, you know, there is some level of elite B2B-ness that goes too far for us. I think if there's, you know, only 100 or so, let's say,
yeah, of course,
you know, you want to just reach only CEOs, that, you know, we can't do. But typically there's a broader set of people that are influential around a certain kind of decision. Mm-hmm. And if there's enough of an incidence right there, we can do some great experiments.
And when you're configuring and onboarding Swayable for, say, a particular kind of demographic, segment, profile, whatever, you know, be that B2C, B2B, are you informing Swayable of that as part of that setup process, or is Swayable determining that itself?
Oh, you mean, are we informing the platform of the, like, of who to target?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, look, I think you're putting your finger on a really important point. Usually the way the tests are done, people have a marketing strategy and they have a target consumer they're going after. But I actually think this is a transformation that's going to happen in the space, which is that people usually take those decisions before they know about the lift you can get. You might do a survey, see who's interested in our product, who has the most demand. Well, that's probably our consumer. Well, maybe. But your marketing is designed to generate more lift. So we've seen examples where, in fact, we have a really nice case study with Intuit, where they had multiple potential target segments. And the one that had the highest baseline demand actually wasn't the one that had the highest lift. There was one that had close to the highest demand, not quite the highest, the second highest. And those folks, when the message delivered to them, had much greater increase in demand. So I think ultimately marketing is about increasing demand, not just starting with people that already have the demand. And if they're not moving anywhere, then you're kind of wasting that effort.
And do you have kind of ongoing relationships with brands so that, you know, back to your kind of, you know, Genzennial kind of example earlier with the baseball cap guy not working, obviously then the variant that worked, as it were, then do you then create kind of variants of that and then do that on a kind of sequential basis?
That's exactly what the teams do that I think use this technology the most effectively. Just, you know, to go back to the muffin brands, for example, Grupo Bimbo now has these learning labs, and Bain & Company's actually been great helping major consumer brands develop these test and learn, test and learn infrastructure. You know, teams of people who know how to do this, go back and repeat and bed down the lessons. And because we're not an agency or we don't create creative ourselves, you know, we see our role as providing that tech measurement that supports the development of that kind of process and internal capability. You know, we ourselves are not the ones doing it, but you know, when brands get it going, you know, they see some extraordinarily large outcomes. We'll typically see, if people are not iterating, it's very easy for us to get a 2x increase in the effectiveness of the messaging, because just the spread of how different lifts you get with different kind of creative, you know, 2x is pretty achievable. When people do those kinds of iterative test and learn processes where they take the thing that worked, they feed that information insight into what they create next week, next month, next quarter, we've seen increases as high as 10x, which sounds unbelievable, but you know, we've got the case study references for it. 10x increase in how much lift you're getting from the campaign work. I mean, it's you can't point to too many things that could offer.
Sorry,
I've
just fallen off my chair.
Yeah, get back up here, let me help you.
So anyone listening to this podcast that basically wants to kind of 10x their performance,
right,
I think we now know who to call.
Call us and hopefully, you know, work with your agency friends as well. You know, we love to work with them and your consultants. It takes a village.
another kind of question for you, I suppose, in a sense, is the whole dynamic, because, you know, you just mentioned agency and you're obviously working direct to brand in some cases. The creatives, the brand, the client services folks, the media folks, not everyone is always kind of in alignment and agreement with kind of what the strategy and the plan is. How do you kind of help solve that sort of tension that obviously never happens?
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, I'd love to say I had the magic answer to that question. I think we would set our sights at contributing positively to it, maybe rather than fully solving it. But look, a couple of things I think are significant contributions. I mean, one is so much of that tension comes when you get analytic, you know, insights data too late to act on it. Because at that point, you're just grading people's homework and no one wants to get the F grade, and they're definitely going to want to have a fight about it if that's what you're offering them. Now, look, you know, we like to see ourselves sort of as doctors, you know, have a good bedside manner. If there's bad news to be told, we get to the point, we tell them the bad news. We're not going to beat around the bush about it. But, you know, there's a big difference between telling somebody that campaign they did 2 months ago wasted millions of dollars because it didn't generate much lift, versus telling them that the thing they're about to launch in a week or two would be better if you went with option 2 instead of option 5. You know, that's a very different conversation. So the tensions, I think, that come out of those really inadequate processes, we've seen them dramatically reduced. In fact, more than reduced, we've seen, you know, outright embracing from folks that have previously been a little skeptical about the use of quantitative evidence for this kind of marketing. I find that the most exciting. I mean, we really try to see our role as you know, champions and supporters of the people doing the creative work. And, you know, we talk to them regularly. We make sure that the product has their feedback in it. You know, we make sure they've all got their logins and they're using it and they've got access to our team to kind of understand what's going on there. Because it's really only helpful if it's a superpower for them to figure out how to reach their consumers more effectively.
And talk about reaching consumers more effectively on a global basis. Obviously, again, you know, going back to your kind of stories earlier, you're selling baked goods to Americans, you're selling baked goods to the Brits, the, you know, the folks in Japan. How does kind of Swayable kind of help get that sort of nuance of kind of localization right?
Yeah, selling English muffins via a Mexican brand to United
States. To Newcastle.
And I think Australia too.
Well,
I grew up in Australia. Look, part of what's so exciting about what we've built here is that because respondents in the consumers that come into the experiments are sourced through smartphones, you know, thanks to the hard work of, I guess, Steve Jobs and Tim Cook and you know, Sundar Pichai, I guess, and, you know, the folks at Google, these app stores are global. And what's brilliant about that is having built it out for the original markets that we started working in. Of course, we started in the United States being based here, but we very quickly were doing tests globally, and we're now very active in all major regions of the world. So that's really cool. We still do more work in the United States than anywhere else, but a very big fraction, I think it's now more than a third of the tests done on the platform are in regions like LATAM, APAC, and EMEA. Aren't too many other regions. That's really the only regions.
Yeah.
Nothing in Antarctica yet.
Space,
maybe. On the International Space Station. That'd be a hard test to do.
Next quarter.
You know.
Talking about the future, I guess, it'd be really good to kind of hear a little bit about some of the kind of the you know, kind of what you're doing right now at Swayable, you know, to kind of, you know, embrace, you know, the mass of kind of new kind of tech that's coming out, you know, from a generative AI perspective onwards, really. Sort of what's on the product roadmap? What can we look forward to see?
Look, we've been so excited about this revolution that I think we're, you know, people are starting to really pay attention to in the last couple of years. You know, I remember actually back to some of the slides when we were first pitching Swayable as an idea. We went through Y Combinator, the startup accelerator program, and, you know, we had sort of phase one, phase two, phase three machines, AI, will be able to make creative. And I remember genuinely most people that saw that slide kind of laughed at us. They're like, yeah, you know, you got to write that kind of stuff down just to make the case, but no one believes that. That's, you know, 30 years away. And I think, you know, it's just been mind-blowing and exciting to see that, you know, machines can contribute now to the creative process. But, you know, we're obviously left with this question of how do you use them effectively and how can we use them to support human creativity and reach real consumers versus sort of telling stories about, you know, the machine replacing, you know, the consumer judgment about what they want. You know, ultimately the person's got to go buy the muffins. You know, the machine's not going to do that. So, you know, Swayable's been right in the middle of, I think, a really thoughtful approach to using AI, in particular to draw out more insight from real consumers rather than replace it. So that's number one. And I think since the beginning, we have been developing population modeling, which means that you basically have a sophisticated view of the consumer landscape, who there are more of and who has more opinions of a certain kind than another kind. And the more that your models are able to kind of get richer and richer detail about that, the more that when you run a test, you can have greater precision because you're able to more easily identify patterns, trends across different demographics. You know, for example, age groups are often got trends across the generations and identify outliers in responses. So all of that gives you more precision, and all of that means that you're getting more robust, rigorous results basically automatically with the given sample sizes that we're using, which are already industry leading.
And how do you keep that current? Is it sort of a real-time kind of learning?
It is, yeah. Okay. The models are trained and retrained on the fly regularly. So, you know, all of the DevOps that goes into that, development operations and, you know, the cloud computing infrastructure that we've built is really paying dividends because as more and more tests are done, we've had now more than 10 million responses through the platform. It knows about consumer attitudes in a way that, you know, isn't possible otherwise. So when we run test number, you know, 1,000 for this baked goods brand, for example, there's a lot of priors that make our understanding of the distribution of consumer responses much more precise.
Okay. Controversial question for you, I suppose, really. Like, a lot of people talking about kind of the kind of ethical kind of aspect of this. You know, what's your kind of perspective on sort of, you know, that really?
Yeah, look, I think there's a lot of important ethical questions around both AI and data collection. Look, we've taken this topic extremely seriously from the beginning. In fact, when we launched, it was just pre the Cambridge Analytica scandals. And we were often asked, why are we incorporating Swayable as a public benefit corporation, for example, a business that by its corporate structure has baked into it a mission, which is not just make as much money as possible. You know, we have a mission about helping people tell the truth more effectively. And so we've never had a position of just taking money from anybody for anything. And, you know, sometimes people will argue maybe we should take money from this group or that group or this product or that product. But we're quite careful about who uses it and if it's used for good versus for disinformation or for things that we regard as a team are on balance more harmful for the world than not. That's number one. And then number two, when it comes to consumer privacy, I think, you know, part of what those scandals back in the, you know, back 5 years ago really started people to focus on is that, you know, you have to take really seriously what you do when consumers give you their information. You can't just kind of show them some big click-wrapped contract and everyone clicks agree and then suddenly, you know, your private data ends up, you know, being used in ways you had no expectation of. In our case, that means that we don't collect personally identifiable information wherever we can avoid it. We certainly don't keep it. Because ultimately, these are about big marketing campaigns. And the fact that, you know, individual A at this address thinks, you know, X, you know, you're having to tell stories to thousands, if not hundreds of thousands or millions of people. And there's no reason to have the individual level granularity in an experiment like that. You need to be able to verify that the consumers are real people. But beyond that, you know, we're not trying to retarget you specifically later. We're trying to support campaigns on big billboards, TV screens, and even, you know, YouTube and digital that's shown to large audiences.
You've already mentioned that you're working with some of the big, exciting brands in the world. Is there one particular brand that you just love to get the Swayable teeth into?
Oh, that's like on the lead list. Oh my gosh! I mean, look, there's a lot, right? I mean, we're now about to work with three of the top, you know, the so-called FANG companies. I think the large tech companies, and we love the collaborations with the tech firms because, of course, we are a tech firm, and I think it's wonderful to be in the room with folks that themselves are shipping products in our category. And you know, especially when we get really positive feedback about the platform, you know, it means a lot coming from a, you know, $1 trillion company that's doing that really well. So yeah, I'd love to get the other two. Let's just say three down, two to go.
Hey, brilliant. And in terms of sitting down with you again in 12 months time at Advertising Week 2024, what do you think is going to be kind of, you know, in this conversation?
Yeah, well, I think you put your finger on it with generative AI, of course. I think, you know, we're just at the first phase. People kind of get what it does and try to figure out how to use it. So I think next year we'll see processes that are kind of a little bedded down that take advantage of it. And look, I've been shocked at how quickly uptake of Swayable has been sweeping through the marketing community. And, you know, don't want to make it totally a pitch for Swayable, but I do think there is a significant transformation going on in the way that people see upper funnel, mid funnel communications. Demand, consideration, intent, versus the kind of traditional use of technology, let's just say traditional the last 15 years, which is really, how do I get more clicks? You know, how do I get more online purchases? People forget most purchases don't happen online, never will happen online. You know, some do, a lot do, but vast majority of commerce happens through other channels. And even the stuff that does happen online, there are multiple touch points. Everyone's very familiar with the attribution problem. You know, you might have been the ad unit that generated the last click. But, you know, I just finally bought an Apple Watch last week, for example. You know, it's taken, I don't know how many years of touch points before I finally made that decision. So what is all that other work doing? Is it doing the lift that it's supposed to do or not? Marketers need answers to that.
I think that's a really interesting point, isn't it? In terms of how does that sort of how does that channel strategy kind of break down and who's contributing what?
Exactly. And ultimately, what drives the decisions to how to make it better? You know, part of what we see our vision as a data platform is, you know, what do consumers think and how can I change it? Mm-hmm. It's one thing to know what they think, but ultimately your job is to do something about that, you know? Mm-hmm. And so at the core of Swvl is the answer to that. How do I change it? What is going to drive those numbers up? And can I get the best possible evidence for that?
Really interesting. Last question, I think, for me is kind of thinking about sort of, you know, Apple kind of Vision Pro coming, XR, you know, kind of, you know, Oculus Quest 3. Swvl will work inside these. I'll still use the word, I'm afraid. Sorry, metaverses, I guess.
Yeah, well, look, I can't give away, let's just say, too much confidential client information, but I can say that Meta is a customer of Swvl. We're very proud to work with them on, let's just say, many of their most important messages. And, you know, you may have touched on some of the ones that we would all regard as very important. Leave it at that, maybe.
We will deduce what we will from that statement. Listen, James from Swvl, thank you so much for your time today.
You bet. Great to be here. Thanks a lot.
The Business of Marketing podcast was brought to you by Demand Exchange, helping you find your next ideal customer